Yeah, you can cut and paste everything.
Exactly. So I wanted to say on record also that, like, so what this is for is, you know, this Anthropocene project does kind of the envelope for all this stuff.
Yes.
That Nick and Sarah are working for.
Yes.
There's these little posts that are on the contributions site for that whole thing.
Yeah.
Kind of tracing the whole project.
Uh-huh.
And I, myself and Louise are kind of writing these little reflections basically about how people have felt about the events, why
mm-hmm.
they came.
Mm-hmm.
The more kind of like, I always think of it, the personal versus the plenary.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a bit more like, how are you? You
yes, know? Right.
How did you feel about what just happened?
Right.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Because they often,
like, behind the scenes, what's
yeah,
really going,
like
what's
this.
Really at play.
So I'm not going to ask you about, like, the content of what you said so much,
mm-hmm.
but just, like, maybe we could start with, like, you know, I don't, how did it feel, and what, you know, the invitation felt like, and what you were,
yeah.
you're feeling like this is the right thing to come to, because you came,
mm-hmm.
and you're lending your time very generously, by the mm-hmm. way, thank you personally. but, you know, what was it that would make you come to this versus something else? What is the, you know, you have a relationship with people that hosted it, but, and then so outside of just that kind of direct connection, did it feel like the right kind of thing? You had some opportunities to meet people, whatever the things
mm-hmm.
are that bring you to something.
Yeah.
I'm just over talking now.
Yeah, it's an awesome question because there's a lot behind there. My name is Yolanda Pushetaniqua. I was invited to speak in the language preservation area. So my personal work is language revitalization. I got my MA in linguistics at the University of Minnesota in 2016. And I have been a community linguist in my Meskwaki community in rural Tama, Iowa. I have a existing relationship with Nick and Sarah. I was featured in chapter 7 of their book, Black Hawk Revisited. So they wrote a book talking about Black Hawk, the usage of the name, and assuming, I guess, you know, the imagery of Black Hawk by commercial mainstream society. And our tribe being related to Black Hawk, that's where they came and reached out to us, reached out to the Meskwaki community. And myself, having been an academic, you know, I know my name has come up, you know, when there are visitors to the community, people who, you know, other Meskwakis, they sometimes recommend me, like, oh, Yolanda, you got to go talk to her. So somehow we connected at some point in time and they interviewed me and I ended up being in one of their, featured in their book. So when they contacted me, I was glad to help them, and I trust them. You know, I trust them because I've talked to them before, and, you know, they were sincere in their outreach and sincere in their research. So, you know, I didn't question, I have no reason to, you know, question whether I fit in or not here. I knew that I did. I knew that they were familiar with me, and they had a reason to invite me. So I was comfortable with accepting the offer, even though I wasn't really sure what it was about. I just knew that it would play out. So as I got to know more about it, again, in the beginning, I actually felt like, okay, I'm very specialized in language. How do I fit into this scheme of environmental issues? But really thinking about it, it, you know, it didn't take long for me to connect it to, everything is all related. All of the impacts from colonialism, everything, you know, all of the settler implications on the Americas, on our indigenous, you know, our indigenous people, our cultures, our language, it's all directly impacting where we are today and how we exist in the world. So I knew that I was going to come here and learn from their perspective, because I knew that it was largely non-indigenous people that would be probably here, with a few amazing indigenous people, some, you know, really all-stars in Indian country. So, I mean, of course, that was like, that's a really good benefit for me to be here, just to be around that. So I'm learning. So I'm coming here knowing that I'm asked to share something that somebody would find of value, even though it comes natural to me. You know what I mean? Some of the things that, they're just my daily life. They're just things I think about or talk about.
Beautiful. Thank you. I hope if I'm doing this, it's not because I'm not listening.
I think it's going to be better if you do it, in fact.
I think I'm helping.
If I do it, she's going to cry.
I really appreciated what you said about trust up there, and this notion of, like, yeah, I don't know, something about, there's so much self-flagellation in the white crowd.
Right,
like,
yeah.
You know, almost reveling in guilt sometimes,
mm-hmm.
I think. And this
yeah.
is a personal reflection. It's mm-hmm. maybe not even part of the interview. But
it runs the spectrum. There are some people who have no guilt and, you know, just unapologetically say get over past, and what have I got to do with it? But then there are people who feel so apologetic that you kind of have to wait for them to come, you know, be willing to take the next step with you, because they need to process that. They want to get that out and get that off of themselves, because they do feel it. And that's awesome when it's genuine.
Yeah, I mean, that processing takes a long time, and it's about the self-healing of, you know, communities outside of yours.
Right.
But what I was thinking about with the trust thing is that, like, also what that is a form of generosity that sometimes we, I think, cut off before we even get the chance to have a conversation. You know what I mean?
Yes,
because I'm feeling so, like, you shouldn't have to help me, mm-hmm. kind of, as a white settler.
Yeah.
From Canada, by the way.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what I don't do then is, like, come talk to you, because mm-hmm. I'm thinking, like,
yeah.
Bullshit on her, you know?
Well, we Native people need to make that effort too, and it's something that we sometimes take it for granted when there are white settler people coming to our land to visit us, to come to be like a spectator at our powwow. We appreciate it. We're like, oh, that's a good person right there. They came and took in our culture for the day. But we need to make strides to spend that time building that relationship and those understandings. And I know that we don't, because sometimes our life is okay. We are thriving in some ways. We still have a lot of beautiful, powerful, really important things going on in our lives that, you know, I'm just living my life every day, and I don't think outside of what, you know, sometimes we're okay. We're doing good.
Yeah.
And so taking the time out to come to something like this and spend time where you know you're going to have a wide audience. It's not just I'm driving 2 hours for somebody I don't know. It's not that at all. We knew, like each of us who came today, we knew that there was going to be an important audience for people who go on to do greater research down the road. This is informing that research. It's creating waves, ripples out into the world in whatever they do. Like we have, this is, you know, a good opportunity for us to share our perspective. We were asked to share our perspective, and that's huge, because there are so many arenas where we cannot do that. We're not allowed to. It's not safe to. Sometimes we want to, but there's nobody listening. Nobody cares. You know, we've all seen instances of that through our whole life, and so it's important to take up that opportunity when it's there. And this is a good one. It's quality people. You know, I trust these people here in this part of the academy. I trust them because I've worked with them before.
Too. That's interesting you said that. Of course, I mean, look at this room right here.
I mean, to me, as a Native person, that's what it is. You know, it's not people who are going to come and join in my everyday lifestyle. You know, we're very different from each other. Even though I'm an academic, a non-Native academic is going to be very different from myself. You know, sometimes even in my own research, it's not what people expect. It's not the same reason people are coming to academia to study and do research. I don't research for the same reasons as they do. So we have deep differences.
That's a good point. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, your tenure and your publication record.
Yeah.
Which is not to make mm-hmm. that cynical or make it bad.
That was never a goal of mine, and I used to kind of like have like a little bit like disdain for. I mean, just not disdain, but like that has nothing to do with me. That is so not my goal. But then eventually, I realized, you know what? That's a safe space. There's funding. That's like committed funding. That's a, you know, once you have a place there, it's at least you're always employed. At least there's always a stream. And for somebody like me, you get to read and write all day again. That's your work. Whereas currently, I'm not doing that kind of work. For you know, that's not my job work. That's my passion
remember
work.
How you opened your discussion today, which is that,
yeah.
you know, you used to have this gig. And
yeah.
Wow. Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, it's also like there's a whole precarious argument there about academics in general and
yeah.
the way that everybody's kind of struggling on some level, but then also the fact that like a lot of them are mostly, I would say mostly, actually, because I work in the institutional, you know, industries of
yeah.
knowledge, that most of them are not actually doing it for truth.
Yeah.
They're doing it for some fetish or interest or whatever,
right.
which is also
yeah.
cool, but it's not even I just feel like people like you should be getting the money if you're mm-hmm. actually doing something for the sake of
yeah and it's hard to this type of work is, you know, the humanities especially or what we fall into humanities, you know, thought-based knowledge, and that's very hard to convince anybody to pay you to do that. I mean, there are a lot, especially for linguistics, you know, a lot of linguists come out of grad school thinking, gee, my only options are try to be a professor, or there's just a few other you know, where else am I going to work?
I want to, I just want to, that's a whole trajectory we could go on. I don't want to go down that the institutional kind of crap mode that you can get into forever, because I just feel it as well. But I want to address what you do as a linguist too, like, because we just started getting into it a little bit, which has maybe inspired me to put on the microphone, which is that idea that, like, a kind of the link between what you're doing and environmentalism seems quite straightforward if you start thinking about this history of abstraction, right? And so making a indigenous woman into a sacred, distant image, or the way that, like, American Indians, indigenous people were operationalized in the creation of the nation, you know, like this kind of the iconography of Mohawks and stuff like that. You know? That's all to me like a kind of continuum that is linguistic almost at its origin. And so I don't know if you want to talk about that link a bit for a couple of minutes. And maybe Louise can play a little bit.
Hi, the last one's here.
I know. We're just doing a recording.
Could you rephrase the question in a more like...
Sorry,
just
the link between... You just described it before and then I made a bunch of jumps, sorry. You were describing the fact that, like, you weren't sure why you were invited originally, kind of, because you're a linguist, or why you were maybe asked to be in Chapter 8, and then it came to you that there's a link between the linguistic research you do and the environmental question. So what is that link?
Yeah, like, a lot of time when I'm asked to speak, if there's an audience that is not familiar with either linguistics or Native American tribes or language revitalization and endangerment, so then that looks a little more like a talk about the basics. And so when I'm just talking about the basics and giving an overview and description of what those things mean, then it doesn't feel like I'm talking about environmentalism, but you know, it does make sense. It makes complete sense, you know, that language is just like the right at the forefront, right almost towards the source of human thought, you know, our just very existence as people. And so that plays into everything environmental, everything dietary, everything in the water, in the environment.
Uh-oh.
Oh, come here, honeykin.
Did you hit her head?
Did you bump heads? Oh, it's okay, baby case. Oh, it's okay. Oh, it's okay. I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. What happened?
She fell backwards.
Yeah. Oh.
Excited.
What?
Yes. Oh, the head. Oh, the head bumped. Oh, that's okay. Get back in the bush. Get the bush. It's okay. Yes. It's okay now, honey.
It's okay.
My head. My head.
I bump my head all the time.
He did bump his head too.
Oh, that was a smile. I saw that. Bonk, bonk, bonk.
There's puppy.
Bonk, 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 bonk. Recovered. Fully recovered. You want to
finish that thought? What was I thinking of? So, when I get into, when I get deeper into language talks, then when I went to grad school, it was like the most profound changing, you know, experience, one of the most profound experiences because of how intense it is. You know, this is like intense. I always think that was like Olympics, but for the brain. I mean, that it's as intense as you can get for somebody like me, because I, even though I'm good in school, I'm not. it's a hard thing to go through. Well, I was so focused all the time. And when, you know, talk about linguistics, that's super abstract. It's super hard to wrap your mind around doing scientific analysis on something that you will never visually see or touch or feel. That's hard. And so that was always a leap, and I'm always pressing myself. So it was very specialized. You know, I was such a specialist and when it came to things about language. And reading, you know, like the literature that goes along with it, there's also a higher level, you know, material by other indigenous language revitalization, you know, advocates out there. So when I think of that, coming from that specialist lens, when they say, oh, come and talk about this, and it's relating to the environment and our, you know, climate change and sovereignty, at first I feel like I'm leaping out of my space of specializing in language. It felt like a leap. just at first blush, but I had to sit there just for like a day or so and really think, okay, you know, and it just came to me, like, this is all around us. Like, I think of our foods have names that are not in English. Like, how can you even, how do you exist when a piece of that whole puzzle, the food itself, we don't even have the name for it anymore? Like, that would be silly. How does that even happen? Like, what, that shouldn't happen. And then I went back to, you know, oh, Sian is sick. Oh dear. You're gonna get sick. Oh dear.
Too many.
Just realizing how
I didn't meet you.
Unfair it is, colonialism. Oh. It never should have happened. You know, our native people, all humans have had the right. Have always had the right to just exist in peace, without abuse, in any sort of fashion, without being robbed of anything, stolen. So to have our land, you know, our homes taken, to have our culture stripped down by policies like genocide, termination. I mean, we've had entire governments have had laws and rules about extinguishing us. Their plan was to wipe us out and kill us. Like, this was written into law for some nations, for some people. So that's absolutely drastic when you're talking about a basic human right. So just standing up for ourselves, this shouldn't have happened. We shouldn't be in this realm where this world, our current world, we probably don't have a fraction of what we used to have. We kind of take it for granted. Like, we think, okay, we do have a lot of our culture. We adapt. Like somebody said, Meskwakis adapt. We do. That's what we're known for. You know, our people are known to adapt everything to how we do it today. It's a Meskwaki version of what you think on the outside looks like something normal to you. We're doing something very different on a different level and conceptualizing it in a, you know, cultural Meskwaki way. But you know, we shouldn't have had to do that.
Yeah. And the story about the
yes, we go met them. We're gonna talk, and then we'll go down the stairs.
We should probably get out of here. Actually, I realize that we think we're keeping this guy.
Oh.
The link between the language disappearance and the disappearance of the people is super key to me as well. Because, like, even if you don't have a word for something, it's difficult to see in the Western frame, and so it's obviously like linked, the disappearance of the people and the disappearance of language. And there was somebody who apologized earlier for not knowing. Right, the big fella.
Yeah.
At the other session, he's like, but I've been told, you know, I've been taught not to learn my own language.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, I mean, maybe we can chat a little more when we get back over there. But I guess one question is like, how did this event feel to you? Like, you know, there are obviously elements of being on stage.
Yeah.
With a very broadly white community looking to
that fact
or something.
It's not new to me to be on a stage, and it's not new to me to be speaking to non-Indian people, mainstream people, or even international, you know, foreign visitors. None of those things are new to me. One thing that's also not new to me is I just continue to get anxiety when I have to do public speaking, and then I get like just a little overwhelmed when I see cameras, and knowing that my friend, you know, she was doing Facebook Live. I said, are you live streaming? And I was like, oh gosh, this is the whole world, you know. That, so to me personally, I have like anxieties about that, but you have to overlook that, because like I told Donetta this morning, I said, we have to do this. We have to start writing, and we have to keep documenting. We have to share. We can't just come all this way and be so good at what we do and then just die and that's it. We have to leave it for the future. We have to spread it out to the world and make that chance. You know, maybe some people don't want to listen, but somebody out there is listening. We have to share.
Thank you for letting me listen right now. That was very beautiful way to end.